It's my pleasure to welcome Judge Charles Rainey, who is our Chief Administrative Law Judge here. He's looking for a gap, I can tell. But I want to turn it over to Judge Rainey to go over the ground rules for this afternoon, this morning and this afternoon's hearing. Judge Rainey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a great pleasure to be here, to be invited to participate in today's proceeding. I am Chief Administrative Law Judge Charles Rainey. I welcome everyone to this proceeding. And this is the investigation of Pennsylvania's electricity market, docket number I-2011-2237952. This is the third of the en bloc proceedings with regard to this matter. And I follow Administrative Law Judge Dennis Buckley as well as Administrative Law Judge Elizabeth Barnes with regard to presiding on the commissioners here today. This is a transcribed proceeding, and I have with me the court reporter, and she will be taking the presentations that are being given here today. Her name is Judy Valencia, and certainly everyone is encouraged to speak loudly and clearly and slowly so she can take down everything that is being said correctly. I ask that everybody turn off their cell phones or at least put them on silent mode so as not to be disruptive to today's proceedings. All of the panelists who will be presenting today, I ask you to complete the appearance sheet. There are three appearance sheets that are at the end of the table there. Please do that, and that will be given to the court reporter, and that is a second check that you are here and you made your presentation here today. Following today's en bloc proceedings, those who are interested may file or submit written comments. Those written comments are due on March 28th of this year, with the exception of those who are making comments with regard to consumer education. Your comments are due on April 4th, 2012. Written comments may be emailed to ra-rmi@pa.gov. Written comments will also be made available. Those written comments will be made available on the commission's website at www.pdc.state.pa.us. Any written comments, written testimony that is being presented here today will be made available on the commission's website. And I ask those panelists who have written testimony that they would like to submit to please provide two copies to the court reporter. I ask that the panelists inform me at the beginning of their panel discussion with regard to how much time they would like each presenter allotted. If you do not know or have not consulted with the others, you will be kept to a certain amount of time. But it would be good to let me know how you are allotting your time amongst the group. And I ask that everyone, as the chairman said, they do have time strictures here today, so that I ask that everyone please keep to the time that you have said that you will keep to. I will be following your time and we'll let you know with respect to whether or not you are going over your time or not. Please make sure that your microphones are on, and I will, in advance, thank everybody for their participation. Let me also say, anyone who wants a copy of today's transcript, please see the court reporter. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Judge Rainey. And again, I want to take this opportunity on behalf of my colleagues to welcome everyone for your participation at today's en bloc hearing. This is the final, as Judge mentioned, the final three hearings that we've had dating back to calendar year 2011. And for those of you in the retail energy market space, you know across many different footprints in this country, but I think they make a very bullish statement here. There's not one jurisdiction like Pennsylvania right now taking the leap of faith to make our market an even better, more robust, competitive marketplace. I mean, it's a testimony to my colleagues here at the Venice who are committed to this issue. And we appreciate the investment that the retail energy suppliers have made here in our state. We know that year-to-date, 1.6 million customers have made a choice to pick a retail energy supplier and save real money on their monthly electric bill. And we want to continue to see those numbers move upward. I'd be remiss this morning if I didn't thank our team, ACMA. I see Karen Mallory to the right. She was multitasking here this morning, getting chairs set up. But Karen, I'm going to ask you and all members of our team, ACMA, who have been part of this work product, just please stand and be recognized. You are to be commended for a job well done. With that, I'd like to now recognize our first presenter this morning, John Bodine, Vice President of Business Development and Sales for On Demand Energy Solutions. John, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Paulson and members of the Commission. I appreciate greatly the opportunity to present before you here today. By way of a background introduction into on-demand energy and its relevance here to this panel, we were formed in 1995 as an independent energy consultant, but having received our license in March of 1999 by the Public Utility Commission for the purpose of being a broker and consultant. So we've been at it for 13 years, and certainly recently we've seen an absolute tremendous increase in not only the number of suppliers coming to market for small and medium businesses, but a tremendous increase in the types of products available to small and medium businesses today. More recently, we have been hired by several statewide associations, chambers of commerce, intermediate units to build energy programs for their membership base. Now, the majority of that membership base is small and medium businesses. So that really, that's our relevance. And in the past few years, we've actually matched up about 5,000 small and medium businesses representing about 25,000 accounts with 17 different third-party suppliers for electricity. So we've been very busy. It has been tremendous growth and tremendous opportunity for small and medium businesses. So the balance of my comments, I just want to go over some of the solutions that we've seen come to the market for small and medium businesses. The first one is kind of unique. It's a guaranteed savings type of product. Certainly, a case can be made that a business should make a decision to switch based on their business needs, the risk tolerances, the market conditions, and that really the prevailing price to compare or the tariff rate has become more of a benchmark that is not as useful because it is not based solely on market conditions. It's based on market conditions over and under collections and things like that from the EDC. So a unique product that has come to market is a guaranteed savings product that's variable. It's out in Penelec right now. It's going to be coming to other EDCs across the state. And the supplier was creative, and they made it very easy for the business. If the overriding small business owner was mostly concerned about doing a deal and being upside down, this product gives them great comfort. It protects the small business owner that if the price to compare would go very high, the discount off increases, so they're protected. But no matter how low the price to compare would fall, there still is a discount to the tariff. So the supplier is wearing risk, but they're trying to make it easy for the small and medium business owner to make a decision that is a really safe choice. They don't need to worry about where the price to compares will go as they are changing every 90 days for small business owners today. But certainly the most common product available for small businesses today is the fixed price contract. Really 3 years ago, there were not a lot of suppliers going to market to small and medium businesses in this state. As the impending rate caps were coming off, they were focused on the large C&I load. But that's changed today. There is a plethora, a multitude of suppliers that have come to the market with fixed price options. So with the increase, So with the increase in the number of fixed prices, we've seen a number of suppliers create what we call a rack rate, which is a daily fixed price contract. And every day they'll produce a price based on typically rate class and kilowatt hour usage. And certainly small businesses today are receiving a tremendous amount of phone calls and solicitations for fixed price offers. Probably what our firm has most been well known for, and it's difficult, it's a more complex product, is our affinity partners have asked us to build energy pools where we would take small and medium businesses and put them in a large aggregated pool. Currently, we have about 1,500 small businesses, medium and mid-sized businesses in the state in these pools, representing about 1.5 billion annual kilowatt hours of power. Now, the way that these pools are designed, and there's a lot of misinformation out there, and we understand it because it's a complex product. But the way that these pools are designed is that the regulatory charges, the transmission, capacity, ancillaries, are fixed by that individual business's meter. So there's no cross-subsidization within these pools on a regulatory basis. Then the remaining energy and losses are pooled together and purchased both from blocks from the forward market as well as the real-time day-ahead markets. So it's very much similar to the way that the EDCs are setting default rates, where it's a combination of forward purchases made over time in a dollar cost averaging way, combining it with real time, and every business in the pool is paying for that power according to their unique load shape. Now the real promise of the future of what we like about the energy pools is that if you combine a real-time component with a smart metering technology, the promise in the future is that a small and medium business, much like the large C&I customers, can make decisions based on consumption with a pricing signal. We're not there yet, but that is the hope and what we hope will happen in the future. Now certainly, the glue to all of this, if we're going to the market and you're a small and medium business owner and you're inundated on a daily basis with fixed price offers or guaranteed savings or a complex pool, which is similar to a block and index pool for large C&I, the glue to it all working is education. And that's the difficulty. And I'm not just talking about the education of what happens if the power goes out, what's the local EDC's responsibility. I'm not talking about the education of making an apples-to-apples comparison amongst fixed prices, making sure all components are included. I'm really talking about the education of how pricing buildups work, what makes all the all-in price, what's the relevancy of a smart meter versus a dumb meter, what's the relevancy of my PLC capacity tag. Those are the type of things that we have labored. There's no other way to go to market with multiple solutions without doing the hard work of going through and educating the consumer. So to that end, we've probably conducted about 1,000 seminars, and we've had about 7,000 businesses come through hour-long seminars to understand these concepts so then they can make an intelligent decision for their business. So we applaud the work of the PUC, and the next panel, right, is on education. Absolutely important for the small business community. Now, one of the things that we've been a real recent concern, and by recent, I mean just over the last few months, is that we have had a real spike in small and medium businesses that through a conversation kind of aggressive telemarketing call found themselves switched into another supplier without their consent or knowledge. It wasn't a major concern a year ago. This is a real recent concern. We've had just in the last few months upwards of 50 businesses of ours that have been switched inadvertently. So that is something we're going to be keeping an eye on and something that I'm sure some of the consumers will be filing some complaints and it will be to the attention of the PUC. Once again, I thank the Public Utility Commission for the opportunity to present before you here this morning.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Chris Hendricks, representing a little company out of Bentonville, Arkansas. And as I've said often, Walmart is probably one of the most savvy energy procurers in the nation, if not the world. And Chris, appreciate you making the trip up here to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Thank you. Thanks for you inviting us, and thanks for allowing us the chance to participate in this kind of historic proceeding, because it's really important for us to make the markets as competitive as possible. So as you mentioned, we're not a typical small and medium-sized commercial customer, but we do have a lot of stores and clubs. So the Sam's Clubs are that size. So we have a lot of accounts within our portfolio that are kind of small and medium. And not only that, but we have all the customers coming into our stores that are residential customers that we kind of look at as our customers. So even though we're not really a small and medium customer, we feel that we have relevance to kind of give our viewpoint around that. So thanks again for the opportunity. And so just from Walmart's standpoint, in the Commonwealth, we have over 150 facilities located throughout the Commonwealth with over 48,000 associates or employees in normal speak that actually work in the Commonwealth. From a kind of competitive market standpoint, we've been participating in the Pennsylvania electricity market since before the rate caps came off, and then have actively participated since then. Kind of around the country, we participate in all the competitive markets that we're allowed to, and that we enjoy the savings enabled from that. But it's more than just the savings. For us, it's more about having control over our own destiny so that we know what the costs are gonna be. And so what we've done for some states, and Pennsylvania is one of them, we have our own supply license. So we actually are a hybrid now. So we actually act as an EGS in Pennsylvania. We buy wholesale power for our stores and act just like another supplier. So from that standpoint, we're kind of a mix between a consumer and an EGS, and kind of have all those different hats that we wear depending on what time of day it is. So from our purchasing standpoint, what we've done, and which is really kind of unique, is we've moved from a fixed price contract, which we started at the beginning, and that worked, and that was good for our budget planning process, and moved all the way down to being exposed to really the PJM LNP price. And so by becoming our own supplier, we now have real-time pricing, which affects our decisions on what to do from an energy efficiency standpoint, what to do related to renewable energy, of where to put renewable energy. And then we can kind of package contracts and transactions around that LMP price, or the kind of real-time hourly price, to then manage our business. So we've exposed ourselves all the way to hourly pricing, and then, like normal businesses will do from a risk management standpoint, then we repackage that so that we can kind of not only have a fixed price component to it, have some stability of pricing, but we also have a diversity of suppliers that we can use so that we're not tied to one supplier and one kind of view into the marketplace, and we can kind of react when we want to react. One of the things that we've seen around the country, and kind of as time goes on, it's really moving in this regard of more products offering. And as you see the markets mature, that's just the way the market kind of moves. So as we kind of participate in the markets of Texas, you can kind of see that where there's more suppliers getting into the market, the products that are offered are a lot more varied and a lot more diverse. Same thing in the UK where we participate. So you can kind of see the natural kind of evolution of the market kind of go from standard discount off of rate kind of utility price to compare all the way down to bundling products together, giving different service offerings. And that's good. That's the way the market should work, and that's the way we like the market to have happen. Just to kind of wrap it up, the one thing that we want to see is we would like to see more shopping. Obviously, you all want to see more shopping, and I think it'll get there over time. It doesn't happen overnight, As we participated, it's a lot about consumer education, but it's more about the consumers have a choice. And their choice sometimes is to stay with what they're comfortable with. So it's hard to kind of kickstart them, but I applaud the commission on moving in that direction and getting this kind of hearing moving. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Our next presenter is Mr. Dow Smith, President of Smith Village Home Furnishings. Welcome.
Yes, good morning, Chairman Powelson and Commissioners. I'm Dallas Smith, President of Smith Village Home Furnishings. We're located in Jacobus, PA, about 5 miles south of York. I was asked to talk about our experiences in finding an electric supplier for a small business. Now, we've been in business at the same location for about 80 years, and we employ about 30 people. Our sales are about $4.5 million annually. Our main building uses up to about 280,000 kWh of electricity each year. And in total, we're probably using about 300,000 kWh with all our buildings. We were interested in taking advantage of the electric choice from the start, but it seemed like a fairly time-consuming undertaking, of course, for a small business, since there was no one place to go really to find pricing and available vendors. So I didn't really actively seek out competing quotes from electric suppliers. But over the past 2 years or so, there has been no shortage of marketers who have contacted me, eager to sign a contract. Most of these marketers are energy brokers or perhaps commission salespeople of specific energy suppliers. Near the end of 2010, I did sign a variable rate contract with Glacial Energy. This contract allowed us to cancel at any time, so our risk was fairly low. I found there were two drawbacks to that deal. They billed separately from our electric utility, which is MetEd. So instead of one bill for each meter, we had two bills to pay. And their monthly rate was, I found, was really not much lower than the rate if I had stayed with MetEd. So this deal actually added a bit to our administrative costs, and my electric rate savings were quite minimal. So after getting several other offers from other vendors over the next few months, I did accept a deal with Next Era Energy, which was about 8 cents per kWh. And that was guaranteed for 24 months. Now the electric supplier's charges do appear on my MetEd bill, and so there's only one bill to pay for each meter. Over the past year, I figured we saved on average about $250 a month, or about $3,000 for the year, compared to MetEd's price to compare. This is about 8% of our total electric costs for the year. I believe that most small businesses are probably not actively seeking quotes from electric suppliers because the time involved, because of the time that it takes to do so and the fact that they are just unfamiliar with the process. As various marketers contact them with different offers, they will probably just pick the one that looks like the best deal. I will mention that our local Chamber of Commerce, the York County Chamber, partnered with a broker and aggregator, which was APPI, a few years ago. APPI held several seminars for the members in order to educate them about electric choice. I feel this was an excellent way for the small business person to become familiar with the process and to get competitive rate quotes from various suppliers. That really concludes my remarks. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present my my experiences here before the panel.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Mr. Jay Hines, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Business Officials. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation. I'm going to try and be very brief. Because I was told to, and number two, because I think you really want to hear from one of the experts in our organization on energy management, Tom Schneider. So I want to give you a quick backdrop. First of all, our association is a statewide organization. We represent school employees who support classroom learning and student achievement. We're not in the classroom, we're not teachers, we're not superintendents, we're everybody else who does budgets, gets kids to schools, feeds them, and takes care of about 3,300 school buildings with facilities needs and energy management. We're in a no dollar left behind environment for schools right now. We went through a $900 million reduction in state and federal funds for the current fiscal year. We have declining local revenues as a result of assessment appeals and high unemployment and reductions in realty transfer taxes because of the housing slump. And we have a huge, huge increase in expenditures mandated through the public school employees retirement system. I'm going to skip over those next two charts you have about the PISA situation, only to say that you'll see in 10-11 that employer contribution rate was 5.64%, and that goes to 21.25% by 14-15. Every 1% increase in that employer contribution rate's about $125 million cost to schools in the Commonwealth. We've also got a new tax law in effect that restricts our ability to raise local revenue. You'll see in the Act 1 chart. We gave you some results of our survey that we did to show you what schools are doing in terms of adjusting to the reductions in state, federal, and local revenues, as well as the significant increase in expenditures, primarily driven by retirement. In response to all of that, we created a school cost reduction and revenue enhancement initiative, and we've been working on creating an inventory, which we did, of more than 500 ways in terms of cost reduction strategies. Some of those are in my one of my last slides, and what I think you want to hear from Tom about is what schools are actually doing in the energy management field. Because as opposed to wage freezes and furloughs and building consolidations and other things in which there's a lot of barriers and a lot of pushback, I don't know that there's any better way that schools can maximize savings without a constituency that's opposed, as in energy management. So it's not just a case of a good idea to look at cost reductions in this environment. It's a budget necessity. And so with that, I'll conclude my remarks, and thank you again for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Thomas Schneider, Manager of Energy and Operational Efficiencies for the North Penn School District. Welcome.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate this opportunity to sit on the panel in front of the commissioner. This is a very important subject. In southeastern Pennsylvania, where North Penn is located, we had rate caps removed in 2010 and 11 in the two different areas of PP&L and PECO. This market change and the continual focus on energy management has been an advantageous source of savings and reduced budgets in very difficult fiscal times for school districts. My background is in facilities and energy management. I'm the former supervisor of operations for another district of similar size, Council Rock School District, which is located in Bucks County in southeastern Pennsylvania. And I can provide information of the benefits of having an open market system as what we have in Pennsylvania for purchasing of electric power. North Penn School District is the eighth largest school district in the state, and it encompasses 2 million square feet of buildings. We have about 12,000 students, and Council Rock is of similar size. Prior to the rate caps being removed in the PECO territory, both districts were paying an all-in price of over 14 cents, sometimes depending upon capacity charges, up to 16 cents a kilowatt hour of power. Since we were able to shop power, the North Penn School District, that rate has come down all in with utility charges down to about 12 cents a kilowatt hour. So it's a significant change when you're looking at approximately 23 megawatts of power, 23 million kilowatt hours of power at North Penn School District. In the PP&L territory, the rate caps went off earlier, And at the time that the rate caps went off for the PPL territory, our rates actually went up by 10%. That is back in the 2010 timeframe. But just recently, we were able to competitively shop that PPL contract because we had a two-year deal. And we actually reduced it by 19%. So all told, the savings of at North Penn School District between the PICO and PPL savings for 2011 are in excess of $175,000, which can go back into the classroom. At the Council Rock School District, they had a different form of purchasing power, which was set up in December 2010, and they have seen a 25% reduction from the utility benchmark, which is in excess of $500,000 savings on purchasing of power. And the difference in the types of products just is a difference of the risk management and how comfortable the school districts have. That's one of the major benefits that I see with the rate caps being removed and having an open competitive market, is that now a school district can evaluate their risk management. They can look at the multiple products that are available on the market, and they can make a decision based upon budget certainty or where they want to maybe cut some additional revenue or cut some additional expenditures, and possibly through different other programs like demand response, increase revenues. That's one of the major benefits of having this market, is that now that school districts have the option, we can actually forecast some dramatic savings. Some of the benefits to the school districts is that the competitive market allows competition. One of the examples is when we were shopping our PPL account recently, we had two suppliers bidding back and forth, reducing their rates, so that we actually received a generation rate of 6 cents a kilowatt hour locked in for 2 years, which is a very good rate in our area. As new suppliers emerge and new products come to market, it's going to be beneficial to school districts. Some of the difficulties that school districts face is obviously that this market, as you heard Mr. Bonian explain some of his products, this market is very difficult to understand for your typical facilities manager and business manager with all their other responsibilities that they have to contend with on a daily basis. So with the help of the PASBO organization, we hold webinars and seminars on this topic. At a recent annual conference just last week, I had a help desk on procurement of electricity and explained the different forms of products that school districts now face. Some of the lack of expertise of purchasing power in school districts does lead to a school district having a very conservative view and low risk view, which they may not be reaping all the potential savings that they might be able to achieve if they were to understand the market a little bit better. And many districts, unfortunately, are not of size to actually come to market and be able to buy some of these products. So with the help of the intermediate units around the state, consortiums have been developed, and that's how North Penn purchases power, through the Montgomery County Intermediate Unit that comprises of 22 school districts coming together, combining their load shapes and their capacity to make it more desirable for suppliers to come and bid on the supply of power. How the PUC can help school districts would be, the biggest thing is continue to support this method. As education progresses through the state, through the school districts, they will see additional savings. I think the competitive market is important to the Commonwealth, and I believe that it's a necessity to schools. Also, if somewhere a glossary of different products could be offered to school districts, it's very difficult to understand what a block and index, what a heat rate, what a variable, what a, you know, it's, for a lot of school districts, it's very difficult. If a glossary could be offered someplace, it would be very helpful. And also, as far as Act 129 is concerned, I hope that that program can stay in force as long as possible, because that is a benefit to school districts. North Penn received $80,000 after a recent renovation. Abington received over $200,000 after a recent renovation. And this program is a viable program, but right now school districts cannot move forward with renovations because of the fiscal constraints that we're faced with. So as long as the Act 129, it's a great program, I just hope that we can try and keep that progressing. And also the possibility of considering behavioral change programs in a Act 129 or some sort of other means, because behavioral change has been proven to be a 5 to 15% reduction in energy. At North Penn, we have a program going on through the Alliance to Save Energy Green Schools program funded by Direct Energy. It was a grant in 8 of our schools, and we've seen a 15% drop in energy consumption because we're teaching the kids about energy management and energy conservation. They're actually going through the schools and doing energy audits for me. So it's a fabulous thing to see elementary school kids understanding how much an incandescent bulb consumes compared to a CFL. And with that, that concludes my recommendations and comments, and I appreciate this opportunity. I think everything the PUC is doing is helping school districts.
Tom, thank you. I appreciate our compensation committee with all those glowing remarks about what we're doing. Before I introduce Deanna, I just want everybody to know you're not on the Direct Energy payroll because they all snapped up very quickly.
No, I'm not. No, not at all. Not at all. But they did fund a grant, a two-year grant for us, and it's a great program that we have in our school district.
This is good news. We look forward to a good Q&A with you. Our last presenter this morning on our small business panel is Deanna Morgan, General Manager, Vice President of GDS Suez, representing one of their new affiliates, Think Energy. When I commend her, she came in to meet with our colleagues, I think it was about a month ago, and we're very excited again, GDS has another investment here in the Commonwealth. And Deanna, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you very much. Again, I'm with GDS Suez, Think Energy, and GDS Suez North America has been one of the top five players in the large commercial and industrial market segment since the opening of deregulation across all of the states. We have weathered financial storms and been one of the only players that have remained constant through the economic crisis that we've seen over the past 4 or 5 years. And so we've really been able to capitalize on our parent company, which is the number one utility in the world. In 2011, GDF recognized an opportunity that because it was solely focused on the large commercial and industrial segment, to really look down market and to take the opportunity to research customer needs, buying behaviors, and approach to a market that would be different and set us apart in the small commercial space. Most REPs have taken an approach of pushing their large C&I systems downstream with a consultative sales approach, which is both inefficient and very expensive to have a one-on-one relationship with every consumer. Other REPs have taken their residential business model and tried to push that upstream, which creates a very impersonal mass approach to the small business market. So we've tried to really look at what small business customers need. And Mr. Smith, you capitalized on it earlier, mentioned time. Most small business customers don't have the time. They don't have an energy specialist who does nothing but procure energy for them. The small business owner typically is the CEO, CFO, energy facilities manager. They're an all-in-one role. So really finding the time and the knowledge to understand the small commercial business space from an energy perspective is time consuming. So GDS Suez took a white sheet of paper completely blank and said, what do we need to do to just target the small and medium businesses? Not use our large C&I systems, not pretend this is a residential approach, but just focus on this segment. And we said there's several things that we need to do. We need a new name. While GDF Suez is the number one utility in the world, it's at the top 30 companies in terms of size in the world. It's foreign, it's a little corporate sounding, and it doesn't create the friendly and approachability that small business customers would like to see. So we created a new name, and it tested very well in the markets that we tested it in, and it's been received very well in the markets that we're currently active, and that's Think Energy. So we're still using GDS Suez in our name, so it's GDS Suez Think Energy. Again, creating a brand new name and logo, not using something that was created for large commercial or for residential. And then new systems. Small business customers don't need a one-size-fits-all price like residential. Residential customers, you can bucket them into certain buckets. If you look at a church that has the same peak demand, it could be open 7 days a week or it could be open 2 hours a week, and the profiles are very different. So we've created systems that have a customized pricing approach in real time to produce for these customers a competitive and customized offer just for them. So we needed a new name, we did that. We needed new systems, and we've created those to create real-time customized pricing to match the customer needs, and then a new approach. So I've heard on the panel so far that telemarketers are inundating small businesses with phone calls, and while that's a very efficient and low-cost way to talk to customers, it doesn't give them that safety measure that they're looking for. I don't know what energy is. Kilowatt hours is a little foreign to me at times. What does the heat rate product look like versus a Blogging Index? And so we are moving into the areas that small businesses are naturally drawn to, the chambers that was mentioned earlier, the other organizations that small businesses are already a part of and already have placed their trust in to either be members of or to be associated with. And so that allows us to do several things. One is to gain their trust. If we have trust with the chambers and trust with the organizations that they're naturally drawn to, we've created kind of an implicit trust with the customer directly. The other one it does, it allows us to educate customers, allows us to tell them what the different products are, to provide that verbal glossary of what everything is that they need to do and how to help them mitigate their risks. So GDS2S has really taken a unique approach, I think, in the market to create a brand new company, systems, and approach just to meet the small business customer needs behind Think Energy. We're in the market, we're really excited, we're seeing great results with this new approach, and I look forward to continuing to support Pennsylvania and our competitive markets with Think Energy.
Thank you. Our first commissioner with questions will be Commissioner Whitaker. Commissioner Whitaker.
Thanks, Chairman. Talking a little bit about some of the concerns or positive interactions we had with marketers that were soliciting the business.
Well, many of them, well, all of them, of course, first made contact by phone, and I had some of them come in and actually make visits in the store. As far as, you know, I don't know quite what you're looking for when you say about positive experiences.
Some of the things that we've heard, you know, concerns about are from time to time, some marketers not being as knowledgeable, perhaps putting, you know, a little bit more of a sales pitch on. Did you find any of those kinds of concerns, or were they very knowledgeable and helpful?
In general, probably most of the people I had contact with in that regard were moderately helpful and moderately informative to all the way down to very little knowledge of the markets and so forth. The people contacting us, since we are not a major player, obviously, in this market at all, as a consumer of electricity, the big guns are not the ones that are contacting us. You know, we're still small fry in this market, so the best people are not the ones contacting us. But some of them were very helpful and knowledgeable, I'd say, and those are the ones, of course, that gain your trust and you can talk to even better. But for the most part, they were not the ones who are going to give you the good information about the markets. That'll probably come from listening to, like I said, the seminars that the Chamber of Commerce would sponsor and that sort of thing.
Just one more question for you, Mr. Smith. What were some of the considerations for your particular situation that you needed to take into consideration as you were finding a product that was going to be most beneficial for you? Was it primarily price? Was it the length of the contract? Was it other options to help you manage your energy usage? What was most important?
By any of the marketers
No one talked about options for managing energy. So the two major components, of course, are the price and the length of the contract, and of course whether it's fixed or variable. And that becomes a judgment, I think, of each individual as to what their risk aversion is and what their outlook is for the electric market, which, of course, I don't know if anyone wants to guess what that is. So, you know, it was just a matter of taking a stab at it and hoping we guessed right. But as far as which is the most important, I'm sure the price is probably the most important part of it. But then again, how long can you hold that price? So both things are important.
Thank you. Ms. Morgan, a couple of questions, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Absolutely.
I don't know about my role for the agent order.
Just don't be combative, right?
You mentioned that you established a new logo. What was the rationale for doing that?
The rationale is GDS Suez, while most people in this room would recognize the name and know that they're an energy player, if you ask the average small business owner off the street, they most likely have not heard of GDS Suez. It's corporate sounding, it's foreign sounding, it's impersonal, and if we are going to target a space that, like Mr. Smith just mentioned, doesn't feel that they're worthy of the big guns, we wanted to get, while still using the GDF name, come up with a different name that is approachable, that sounds more friendly, and that is more relatable to small businesses.
So your name and logo are separate from your utilities?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Commissioner Carter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. I want to thank all of the panelists for being here this morning. And, your testimony, I guess, is a testimony, Judge?
Yes, it is.
It's a testimony. Mr. Bowden, if you could, for a minute, just kind of expand a little bit on your business profile. I found it pretty interesting, and I think for the record, it might be helpful if you would expand on what you do, which way you do it.
Well, we were founded in 1995, and obviously there wasn't any shopping going on in 1995, so we started the company focused on the demand side of the meter. We have a lot of former utility folks on our staff. At one time, on-demand energy was even acquired by a local utility to build out a system, and then the company was purchased back. So we have a lot of expertise in demand side green efficiency projects. And in 1997, when Duquesne Light opened up, and then 1999, we received our license. Our focus has been more on providing procurement services. I mean, it's quite interesting. Whoever put the panel together was brilliant, because there's a common thread throughout a number of things that were said here. And I would say the small business owners not knowing who to trust, getting inundated with telemarketing calls, not having someone on staff that can understand block and index strategies, which we offer for small and medium businesses from fixed prices. So our business model today really is working with affinity partners. Chambers of Commerce primarily, there's 100 chambers that we work with in the state. All of these membership-based organizations where they're dependent on membership dues, they're gonna do their due diligence to roll out solutions. They're gonna vet the consultant or the supplier. So I think the model that we're doing, and it's similar to what GDF Suez was saying, working with chambers, similar to what Mr. Smith said, the most helpful thing was attending a seminar from the local chamber. That's the model we're working at, is really to take the time to educate businesses, and that's our focus today. But our roots started on the demand side of the meter. Today, we exclusively are an independent consultant working with membership-based organizations.
And you're on the demand on the customer side of it.
Yeah, today we're 99% of our activity is helping people select a supplier. So we have relationships right now with 22 suppliers. I never would have guessed 24 months ago that in helping the small and medium business community that today we would have placed businesses with 17 different suppliers. So many different options, so many different terms. The contract language is different. The products are complex. The complexity, quite frankly, helps a consultant like us exist. we have a lot of job security right now as the complexity of products come to market, there's more and more choices. But that's exclusively what we're doing today, is help small and medium businesses and large businesses safely choose a third-party supplier.
I'd like to also go back to Commissioner Whitmer's question, Mr. Smith, and I'm going to place it to you because you actually did mention that recently you're seeing a much more uglier side of retail marketing. Could you talk a little bit more about the switching and slamming issues and the kinds of things, examples of what you're seeing in the marketplace?
Yeah, I can't. We really didn't see examples of true slamming until really the last few months. We've had small and medium businesses placed with a particular third-party supplier. The only reason we found out about it is a utility switch had occurred. They showed up on a drop report of a supplier. And there was a common thread, and we talked to roughly 50 small businesses around this issue in the last 4 weeks. The common thread was they received a telemarketing call saying, very pushy, needed to put them into a program, told them not to worry if they're already in a contract. In some cases, they were able to acquire the account number from the consumer. In some cases, they did not. And without signing anything, without agreeing to anything, they were switched to another third-party supplier. Now, we were able to, in almost all cases, go back and work with the small and medium business and get them back into the contract they were originally with. And really, I think a number of them have expressed that they would be filing formal complaints to the Public Utility Commission. At this point, you know, I was briefed on it this morning. I'm not sure if any have yet. I suspect a few have. But I think you'll probably see a lot more of it in the coming weeks of people filing that they were actually switched out of the contract without their knowledge. So it does concern us greatly. I mean, as you said, it's the other side. We've heard that has happened in other states as things got competitive, and so it does give us concern.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, I guess the question that I have is, I get the impression that while the process in and of itself is cumbersome and pain in the neck, I can say something, the benefit of accounting makes it somewhat worthwhile.
Well, in the end, yes, it does. In the long run, of course. And especially since I'm on this 24-month contract, at least now with every other telemarketer that's calling, I can say, no, I have a contract, I'm fine, thank you, and that's the end of it. Once you have a contract in place like that, you know, then it's fine. But it's getting there that, of course, takes some time and annoyance of everyone, I guess.
Do you feel that having been through this, the next time when your contract expires, you're going to be in a better position to kind of make your choice a little more efficient?
Yes, I think so. I'm much more knowledgeable now of what to ask and what to look for. So, okay. Yes.
And finally, Mr. Snyder, in from your school districts that you're supporting, are you guys taking advantage in any way of any type of subject matter expertise?
Pardon me?
Are you using consultants?
Oh, yes. For the power purchase, we have a broker, which we actually went through an RFP process and solicited proposals from numerous brokers and then sat through and talked about the possibilities and what they can offer.
Yeah, because that's great. You're showing some incredible savings that certainly the school districts can find uses for those funds. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Berger. Commissioner Pauley. Just to follow up on Commissioner Gardner's questions, Mr. Bodine, we're all sitting here wondering who. because we
deal very harshly with EGS as the step on the line. They tend to poison the well for everyone. Do you know if this was an EGS, an E1 EGS, or was this a broker on the shifting customers to any one EGS?
The EGS is more and more, as the young lady from GDF Suez said, are employing telemarketing calls to go out. So in some of these calls, we don't really know if it's a separate telemarketing firm promoting a particular EGS, or was it the EGS employing that telemarketing specifically to market it. But of the 44 to 50, I can't remember the exact precise number of small businesses that this has happened to, it appears to be 98% of one particular EGS. Now again, if the telemarketer worked for the EGS or was an outside telemarketing firm promoting a particular EGS, I don't know the answer to that question. We haven't completed our investigation. I wish I had legal counsel here to say whether I should say who the EGS was or not. But I feared it's not in my comments when I started on this subject that this could come up. But as of right now, it does appear to be one EGS. We haven't completed our research. It does seem to be an EGS with similar stories in other states that we fear may have just recently come into Pennsylvania.
Well, you don't have to mention their name, but we'd like to know off record. If I were that EGS, I would plan on being on our Christmas list for a long time. I'm curious about Mr. Schneider, what you meant by you hope that the Act 129 programs continue. Could you elaborate?
I understand that there is a length of time that the programs will be initiated, and I'm not sure if they're going to be extended in the future, and how long they'll be funded through the utilities.
These are the energy efficiency and conservation programs and the monies that are made available?
Yes.
For certain measures? Okay. I just want to make sure I knew that for sure. Mr. Hines, are other school districts doing as Mr. Schneider's school district is doing? Are they banding together like this and taking advantage of combining their load and benefiting from this combined approach?
Generally across the state, yes. Tom's district is one of the very large districts in Pennsylvania. So their scope is much different than Western Pennsylvania, where you have much smaller, more rural districts with much smaller budgets. So the scope is different, but fundamentally, yes. Districts are trying to work through intermediate units or on a regional basis or on their own, one way or the other, because again, energy is one, demonstrated savings, and two, no known constituency to oppose it. So it's going on statewide, regardless of size, location, wealth of the district.
I suppose the complexity that you mentioned is endemic to a business that has a unique load. It's not like a residential customer who doesn't face nearly the complexity. So that's why a consultant can make a business of it, because of all the variable products that are being offered to unique loads of businesses. I think the legislature had that in mind, actually, because before restructuring, it was a take it or leave it pretty much proposition with the utility. The utility was in no position to be making all these unique offers. So this is, I think, a good problem to have. Mr. Schneider, you mentioned at the beginning that you had some problems discovering what offers were available. We have in place papowerswitch.com, and it does have a business section, but of course it primarily gives price and then invites you to make a call to learn more. I'm what I'm getting at here is PA power switch of use to businesses?
In the school district realm, it's really not, doesn't fit our model and our load shape and our capacity. We're a unique load shape to a supplier. PA power switch, I'm on it frequently. People ask me all the time with my title, who should I purchase energy from? And I'm on there frequently on the residential side and the small business side. But it doesn't offer the products that are available for consumers like the school district.
Well, that's good to hear. Let me ask one more question, and that is Mr. Hendricks. From my experience, I know Walmart has been very active in electric choice here and elsewhere. I've seen you personally, Chris, active in the National Energy Market Association, and I compliment you and your company for that. As an EGS purchasing in the wholesale market, have you seen adverse effects from any market power in the wholesale market?
In PJM, no, we have not.
Well, that's good to hear, because we can't do an awful lot about it, but we, of course, depend on the wholesale market and the competitive acquisition of default supply in the wholesale market. And if market power is being exerted in that market, it reflects on the default price for customers in Pennsylvania. That's what I'm asking.
No, I mean, even for example, I think currently we have contracts with about six different suppliers for our Pennsylvania load across the state. So we have a good mix. So we don't have any issues with liquidity or with market power issues.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to recognize Vice Chairman Paul. Thank you, Chairman. I wanted to start by echoing the sentiments of Commissioner Gardner and Commissioner Cawley on this landing matter, and would also welcome any input that any of the rest of you may have on that matter. We take that seriously, so thank you for those comments. Question for Mr. Hines. I'm curious. 500 school districts in Pennsylvania?
500.
How many of them do you believe have switched, or do you know how many have switched at this point?
I do not. I can't answer that question for you.
I'm just kind of curious whether this is at the beginning of this, or whether a majority of school districts have or are considering.
Well, I would answer the question in this way. Again, we don't have the data. Tom may have a good idea from his regional perspective. But I mean, part of the issue is that it's not really in the DNA for risk-taking of our members. You don't want to read about your investments going south. You don't want to get a demand response and find out that you've lost energy one day and can't recover it. So there's some risk aversion. And Tom talked about this concept of risk management because he's in a situation where that district has hired the expertise to address it. Again, much smaller districts with much smaller budgets don't have the ability for in-house expertise, so the change dynamic becomes much more difficult. Again, that's not a direct answer to your question, but...
Mr. Smith, I'm particularly interested in your testimony this morning, being a small business owner and experience. There are a few times in life that you have an opportunity for a do-over, and if we could declare that this morning, a do-over for you in your electric choice. After hearing the comments this morning and after your experience, I'd be curious how you might go at this differently.
Well, I don't know that I would really approach it that much differently. obviously, as I stated, the overall savings we're realizing here is about 8% of our electric bill. It probably wouldn't justify spending a lot more time on the effort. I probably would have gone to these seminars that APPI was having earlier. But other than that, I'm not too sure if I would have made it much differently because, again, going out and contacting individual vendors directly, which would, to me, that would be the alternative to sort of waiting for them to contact me. I just don't, I don't see any advantage to that.
Thank you. Question for Mr. Bodine. It seems that much of the decision is economic or financial for companies in terms of switching decisions. I'm curious in your guaranteed savings program, if it is, maybe it's proprietary, I don't want to share this morning, I'm just kind of curious of what kind of a guarantee is being offered to those customers in terms of savings.
Sure, yeah, it's no secret, you know, it's out there. It's not our product per se, so we're a consultant that a particular supplier developed for the chamber members that belong to a group of Chamber Choice chambers throughout Pennsylvania, 30, 35 chambers. So the original version started when the Pennsylvania rate cap came off January 2011. It's expiring May of 2012, we've offered a renewal, and the discount, I believe, was 2 to 14%. So for 2011, it averaged 10.5%. So as you looked at the PTCs in Penelec, they changed from, I think, 7.2 to 8.4 in that range kind of throughout 2011. If you took the percentage off by where the PTCs were, it averaged for the year 10.5%. In hindsight, it was a great deal. And certainly when you go into signing a fixed price contract or a variable discount or a block index, only after the fact can you look back and say, you know, how did we do? And all the small businesses did well. It really did well if you consider how many small business owners selected it because it was a guaranteed savings. To the degree that it's encouraging switching, that value would be harder to measure. We certainly can measure the percent off. Back to your previous question, Vice Chairman Coleman, on school districts. We also have, it's 9 or 10 intermediate units that have hired us to build energy programs, mostly on the western side of the state. So to address the question of how many are switching, from our experience, we have 101 school districts that we've helped switch. Not all of the school districts in those intermediates use the consulting services provided by the intermediate unit and went and did different things, but I don't know of any school district in those 10 areas that did not switch and make a choice to switch. So I think it's pretty pervasive, at least from the experience we've had with the K-12 market, that probably the vast majority have switched.
Thank you. Well, in the spirit of full disclosure and transparency, Dan, maybe I ask you the same question. Is there a product offering from your company that is similar in terms of offering some type of a guaranteed savings for small business consumers?
Absolutely. We are developing products that both give customers the kind of the budget certainty over the term, where they don't want to have to worry about the LMP markets or any of the variable rate products. Those are very easy to compare to the currently published PUC out there. And so it's an easy conversation. It's a fun conversation to have because it's pretty transparent about what their price savings would be if they signed up on the term product. With the variable rate product, just to echo the sentence, it's harder to say what your savings will be other than looking historically. Now, historical is a great predictor of the future, but we're a little bit more cautious on guaranteeing any type of savings on variable rate products.
And again, thank you to all the panelists for coming today. I found this a very good discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. I guess I have two quick questions. And Jay, I want to thank you. You made my Sunday morning on Sunday, March 4th, in the Tribune. There was an article entitled "School Districts Saving Money by Shopping for Energy." And I got to tell you, if you look at some of these numbers, the Hempfield area school districts poised to save more than $1 million. The Kiski area school districts have saved between $84,000 to $100,000. We heard this morning the North Penn School District and the Council Rock School Districts down in southeastern Pennsylvania upwards to $500,000. So the market's working, but I hear you say there's a little bit of disconnect in terms of the technical aspect of product offerings. How do we make that simpler so you can make these easy decisions. And today, we're debating, a model or an end state to make it better for customers. And you guys, residential, street, business customers, trying to make it better. And I have a question. I guess it's going to be a shotgun approach here. So we have this model, and we have something known as default supply in Pennsylvania. And Chris, I read your testimony, and Walmart feels very strongly that electric distribution companies should focus their strength on the distribution and reliability of electric service, delivery of electrons. And we struggle with that as a commission in educating the most rank and file customer that when the lights go off during the summer months, PECO, PPL, one of the first energy, T&D assets is going to come out and service you. So the question is, don't you think we have a much more robust model if we made reforms to our current default supply model, as you know? So anybody want to take that question? Because I think it's the 800-pound gorilla in the room this afternoon that we want to get to. So, John, do you have any comments there?
Well,
if you have any buyers and sellers of product, I think it would be a much more robust competitive market for customers. But that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, kind of what I talked about in the beginning there, analogy I would use is someone just started getting into the stock market, never had invested in, and the stock market collapses, and I'm never going to invest in the stock market again. To the degree that default rates are not truly reflective of entirely just the market, you have these over-under collections, it's hard to know who's going to switch, who's not. And the timing of it for a small business owner, and it's happening in PPL right now. I mean, the rates of last summer were 13 some cents or 6.2. That kind of volatility is crazy, but for small business owners to come out and look and say, hey, well, the utility rate is 6.2, I made a bad deal, I signed at 8 cents, I'm just going to go back to the utility and never want to switch again. To the degree that an artificial or default rate isn't truly reflective of where the market is, to the degree that it would dissuade business owners in the future and get gun-shy of switching, I think that would be bad. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think a 90-day default rate that can fluctuate that much in the long run won't do the market good.
Chris?
So you have my written comments of how we feel. So the way it's a transition currently. So we feel that the current market with the price to compare is a market with training wheels on it. So it's not a true competitive market, and it really won't be a true competitive market until the EDCs are out of the default supply model. And I'm on the panel this afternoon, so I'll talk more about it then.
Anybody else have any comments on that?
Yeah, I would just say customer feedback from the past couple months is a hesitancy to switch because in 3 months the default rate will change. So how do I know, and to echo the sentiments earlier, how do I know if I buy the stock now it's not gonna go up or down, right? And so the default rate structure, it's a good analogy to say it's a competitive market on training wheels. And I think elimination of that default pricing structure could benefit customers to force the competition.
I again want to thank you all. I have my colleagues, excellent testimony here this morning. One last point I'll make, and I look to my friends in the school district, you are a very active lobby here in the state. I want to commend you for embracing what we're doing here in Pennsylvania with competitive electricity markets. But I want you to look ahead. We'll be calling on you because there's an old scenario that might unfold here. You need 102, 26, and 1. And there's a very powerful statement in your testimony about the cost savings that you're experiencing under the current paradigm. And if we make it better, I can only imagine your legislator or your senator not wanting to embrace those changes. So thank you for being here. I appreciate your testimony. I'd like to get our next panel assembled. This is the Statewide Consumer Education.